Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
When the Santa's hell. And coming at you live from the Resistor Ranch, it is Radio Contra. I, of course, am NC Scout, the best-selling author of the number one bestseller on Amazon currently for about a year and a half now, The Gorilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio. We've also got The Gorilla's Guide to Signals Intelligence and The Gorilla Dispatch, Volumes 1 and 2. All available on Amazon.com and, of course, Brushbeater.store. It's really good to be back here in the saddle with all of you here in the Resistor Ranch. Man, we are moving at light speed right now, trying to get some really exciting things spun up. Sitting here in the classroom right now, so it might be a little bit of an echo. Past couple of episodes might have been a little bit of an echo here on the mobile microphone, but that's because we are literally burning the midnight oil trying to get a number of projects underway. Yet again, it is always to give this community the absolute best possible. The absolute best of everything. You know, I told someone recently, we were having a conversation about something else entirely. And, you know, the topic of business stuff came up, and with Brushbeater.store and, this podcast and its success and just, you know, all of it in general, you know, and I said, it's really quite simple. I serve this community, and, I don't think that there's a greater undertaking, a more noble undertaking than serving one's community and a whole dedication and devotion to it, especially one that has given me so incredibly much, the support over the years, with everybody coming to class and this incredible community and the group of just incredible patriots that are over at forum.brushbeater.org, which is the alumni forum. You know, the 20, almost 20,200 followers now on X. You know, it's, I tell you, and we picked that up quick too, by the way. And while there is a little bit of overlap between one community and another, there's a lot of new people that we're picking up. You know, there's a lot of new followers. We have 20,000 subscribers to Radio Contra. Just over that, we, you know, 1.1, almost 1.2 million downloads now in just a few years, and consistently being ranked in the top of the news commentary podcasts. It's really something that's amazing. And, it all boils down to that simple two-word phrase, I serve. The 51st Infantry Regiment, the old Infantry Regiment of the Long Range Surveillance Companies, they were long range patrol companies in Vietnam and then became long range surveillance in 1988. When they were reactivated, that's the motto. That's the regimental motto. It's on the regimental crest. And it's one that I always took to heart. I serve. I am a part of something much, much larger than me, and I am here to serve it. And that's an attitude that I think would do some people very well to revisit. But it is one that I wholeheartedly embrace, and it is one that is very powerful, and it's one that I live by. So, you know, seeing this wonderful community that has developed and flourished around just getting out there and doing something, right? Doing something. Look at what can be done. And when you look at things that way, I don't know how anybody could be blackpilled. I don't know how anybody could get down in the dumps. And, you know, a lot of it for, you know, good and bad, a lot of the negative stuff that we get served to is online only. You know, online only. And I say for good and bad because it, you know, the internet's a great thing, okay? It's a great tool, but it's a double-edged sword, and you have to step outside of that. You have to step sometimes well outside of that, you know, and the whole phrase, touching grass, why that's so doggone important. You know, and getting out there and doing stuff, making it happen in the real world. And, you know, the internet's a big part of that. You know, the internet's a big part of that. If you're using it as a tool to show the world, hey, this is what we're doing, come join us, then awesome, man. Like, there's no better undertaking than that. As long as you are providing the world with something. And, of course, if, you know, the flip side is that if you're using the internet only for the doom porn aspect of it, then that in turn is going to feed that negativity, and it's going to create a feedback loop for yourself. So anyway, I think that, you know, what I'm really trying to say here in the introduction is that there's a lot of fear to go around. There's a lot of doom type stuff to go around. There's a whole lot of that, and you know, I feel like at times we get served with just way, way too much of that for our own good. And, you know, cutting through a lot of that nonsense with a knife and kind of shedding light into the darkness is a good thing from time to time. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this episode. So, you know, coming off an incredibly busy weekend, had a wonderful weekend. I hope all of you did too. And getting things set up for something really, really exciting in the near future, going into the late summer, early fall. I don't want to pull the curtain back on that just yet. I don't want to tell people too much just yet, but I have a lot of exciting projects that we've got going on with BrushFeeder.io's store, and I think that all of you are going to be really, really excited about it as well. It's been something that has been a long time coming, and it is going to be the next step in how we are carving out our stake in this community, how we are really putting ourselves into a position with BrushFeeder.io's store to just absolutely provide the very best to this community. And, you know, the chess rigs are on the way. I want to give a quick update on that. May 20th is when they will be in hand. I have the hard date sitting here right in front of me. They are on their way right now. So the first batch of chess rigs and M81 have been completed. They are on their way right now, and so we're literally 5 days out from that. You can see images of these. They're up on BrushFeeder.store, so you can check those out over there. There are product images of them in M81 woodland camo, which is so awesome, because there are not a lot of chess rigs that you find that are as versatile as this design in M81, and low profile, very lightweight, very versatile. I think everybody is going to be I'm telling you, they're made out of a Cordura, super heavy duty design. These things are really, really incredible. A lot of people who came to class in the past few months have had hands on with the prototype model that I had here in class, and pictures of that are up on brushbeater.store as well, so you can check all of that out. The Brushbeater Scout Rig, you will see that. But we also have the 152 pouches. So the AR-152, one of the hottest incarnations of the Balthing out there. I sell a lot of those radios. They're extremely popular. I sell probably about 200 of them a month. So they're extremely popular for a lot of reasons. People really like the form factor on them. I really like them not because of the form factor, but the power output is good. You know, it's puts out a true 10 watts on VHF, puts out about 8.9 watts or so on UHF, of the ones that I tested on a bird watt meter. They do perform as advertised, and it's really good. I mean, when you're using it in the field, maybe you got gloves on or whatever, larger buttons, a larger screen, a larger everything is a heck of a lot easier to index. I'm a big fan of them. So, you know, that's why I like using them. When everything is bigger, everything is more tactile when you're in the field. So, you know, when you're setting a Balthing up to be a data terminal, which is how I advocate using them, you know, a lot of people who aren't familiar with this podcast or aren't familiar with me or definitely haven't read the books seem to think that, you know, for whatever reason, I'm a big advocate of analog only voice, whatever. And it's like, okay, you know, you and your 10 airsoft buddies on your little bullshit LARPing team, you know, I don't really care what you're doing. This is how you really operate in the field. Okay. We're not all running around like it's fucking Call of Duty or something. Yeah. Anyway, not to get on that topic, but, with that said, so, you know, we sell a lot of those. I have a pouch coming for them, a dedicated radio pouch. And again, price point is going to be, I think, probably one of the best price points on the market. Again, the Chess Rig coming in at just over $100, and the Balthing Aero 152 radio pouch, which also is going to be the first run of them, is in M81 Woodland, going to be coming in at $29.99. You know, it's I'm telling you, folks, my goal, again, like I said, I serve. All right, I serve. I'm not trying to, you know, make a bunch of money or like any of that. I make my money fair and squared. I make it off of training you and providing you with the best equipment that I can at the fairest price possible, at the absolute fairest price possible. And so, you know, I'm not trying to become a millionaire off of anything. It's just providing our community with the very best, you know, and affordable options. Because I know that, you know, we live in the time of Bidenomics, and not everybody's made out of money. And there is a lot in this community. There's a lot of ways that you could spend a whole lot of money and not get a lot in terms of return on investment. And so, you know, my goal is to be the complete opposite of that. So much bang for the buck, you know, that's really what I'm looking at. So, you know, with that said, that is kind of my business philosophy behind everything. And this community has really spoke to me in spades. You know, I talk to people in the industry constantly on a daily basis. And, you know, they just tell me, man, you really do have one incredible customer base and clientele base, because, your growth is just absolutely wild. And, you know, and I'm being told this by, you know, AGM, I'm being told this by US Night Vision, you know, the other companies that we work with, all the companies that we work with, they're looking at that. They're looking at it at the macro level. And so, you know, anyway, all I can say is thank you, and that we have some incredibly exciting things. Your support has been able to enable that growth, and is really a true grassroots movement in motion. And it's something that's very, very important to me to be able to say thank you. So it's not a sales pitch at all. This is me telling the community thank you, from the bottom of my heart, from my family to yours. Thank you very, very much for the opportunity, for the vote of confidence that you continue to give us, because we are a 100% family-owned and operated company. You know, I don't have a whole bunch of employees. Right. We're not some mega corporation in the middle of nowhere. You know, when you email me, you are talking to me specifically, and that might be for good or bad. You know, if you know, your name is Paulette out there, and some of you on Twitter know who I'm talking about, you know, and you're going to send me an email telling me you want me to teach you all the things in an email and answer all of your questions, and you want a prompt response right now. You know, nah, I'm sorry, Paulette. I wrote a book for that. And if you don't like that answer, well, sorry. I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, we joke. I mean, it's really not funny, Paulette, because you made me very, very angry. So angry that I wanted to share that with the entire world at your expense. But, you know, we got to have fun. You got to have a little bit of fun with it, because if you ain't having fun, you know, just wait a little while. And you know, life is a lot of fun. I like to have fun. And a lot of what I do and a lot of what I say and, you know, stuff, my engagement with people online, a lot of it's tongue-in-cheek. And, you know, it's you either get that sense of humor or you don't. Anyway, let's get down to business. I've been talking way, way too long here. Let's get down to business. Let's talk a little bit of solar flares, talking about doom and gloom in the world. So, you know, all going into Mother's Day last week, and I hope all of you spent a little time with your mothers out there, or, you know, your wife and significant other, because, you know, you owe your mama the world. You really do. I mean, for good and bad, but all of those experiences, no matter what they were, you know, because our parents are never perfect, but you did come from them, and they, whatever experiences you had, for good and bad, because I've got some close friends, and we had a conversation about Mother's Day, and you know, one of them had a little, it was a little intense of a conversation, to say the least, devolved that way. And I'm never one to get into somebody's personal business and, you know, tell them what, hey, you know what you should do. Because, you know, to be fair, I hate it when people tell me that. You know what you should do? Well, you ain't me. You know, you ain't me. Unless it's qualified expertise, and I solicit that advice, you know, but kind of unsolicited advice, you know, so I stay away from it. But the conversation went in that direction, and you know, I just told him, hey man, you know, I understand that you've got some bitterness of some things, and this is a close personal friend of mine. I said, I know you got some bitterness, man. And I'm not saying you're not justified, because you are. You are. But those situations, for good or bad, helped make you who you are. And they shaped you into the man that you became, which was a very good man, and a provider. And so There's good in everything, and you have to look at the good in everything. And that ability to forgive and not hold on to a lot of that negativity. Now, that's important. That is so important. And, anyway, point is that we owe the world to our mamas, for good or bad, right? And so I hope that y'all spent a little bit of time, a little bit of family time, if you could. And if not, you know, unfortunately, and you know, that you at least put some thought into it and said some prayers. But anyway, enough about that. Enough about negativity. You probably also noticed that the night sky was a little active. The night sky had a little color to it. That we were able to see the Aurora Borealis. People were reporting sightings of the Aurora Borealis. Friends in my circles were reporting the Aurora Borealis all the way down to at least North Florida. So there were reported sightings on the internet all the way down to Puerto Rico, which is really interesting. Pretty cool if you ask me. We did see it, saw a little bit on Sunday night. It was kind of cloudy here on Saturday night, and I was a little occupied with some family stuff anyway, so we weren't looking too terribly closely for it. Friday night, it was real cloudy for a while, so we weren't able to really see it that well. But still, it's pretty cool. Right, it's pretty cool. And unless you've been living under a rock, you know what causes that. Because it's been all over the news. People have been talking about it. It's been, you know, here, there, and everywhere, right? Solar storms. Oh, man. CMEs. Coronal mass ejections. And, like, all of this scary buzzword terms. And when I was coming up here this morning and getting ready for work today and doing my thing, I was answering some emails, getting some stuff churned out, and kind of skimming the headlines and then getting ready to do some site maintenance up here and working the cows a little bit and, you know, doing all the things. I had a radio show host on in the background. I'm not going to say who it was. But they had a quote-unquote expert on, you know, as these guys always do. I don't know where they dredge these people up from. But this guy, it wasn't that he was entirely wrong, but he wasn't entirely right either. And you have to understand that there's a flavor to all of this. When people are scared of things, they tune in. Okay, your ratings go up. And when you're living and dying based on the ratings, that's kind of all you're paying attention to. So, I'm not going to say one way or the other about any of that. I'm just going to say that what I heard, I was kind of unimpressed with. And I wanted to field this episode today to kind of cut through a lot of the BS that I was hearing on there. And, you know, is there a cause for concern on some of this stuff? Yes. Do I think that it's warranted or it warrants, you know, being, you know, so intensely paranoid that you're going to have to run out and, like, buy all the things, you know, panic buy stuff and, you know, just do all the crazy things, you know, give your mind away to paranoia. No, I don't. Long story short, no. So let's talk about it. Let's dive into this thing. So there's currently a solar storm going on, and, you know, that much you do know. The coronal mass ejections, you know, you've heard about all that. You know, what is it? Essentially, the sun spits out energy every so often, and those cosmic rays travel to the Earth sometimes and affect the ionosphere, right? Because it's raw energy that's hitting the Earth. In a nutshell, now I'm speaking in very, very basic layman's terms. I know that there'll be engineers and physicists that are going to listen to this and are probably like, whoa, that's way oversimplified. Yeah, it is. I could get overly technical with this, but I don't want to because that's not the audience I'm speaking to. So, you know, a lot of conversation has been had about electromagnetic pulse and the Carrington event. Now, the Carrington event, I'm going to talk about here in a minute. Electromagnetic pulse, basically, when you have raw energy that is hitting the Earth, it's going to overload circuitry of the things in the affected area, right? Okay, does that make sense? So essentially, a near lightning strike is what you kind of have to think about here. You know, I remember one of my earliest memories as a child. We had a cordless phone. House got hit by lightning, and cordless phone literally popped off of the cradle. And, you know, there was a little flame to it, you know, the internal circuits burning out on it. It was like a Casio or something. Early phone. We're talking about 1980s here, you know, early cordless phone. And that sucker popped, you know, and smoked, and it, you know, lightning hit it. That's an example of an electromagnetic pulse. If you can imagine a near lightning strike doing something like that, then you can rationalize EMP. That's not a perfect example, but that's one that is relatable, I think, to most people out there, because we've all experienced it. We've all experienced near lightning strikes, might shut your car off or whatever, you know, just various damage from lightning strikes. A lot of people out there have experienced this, have seen it. So, go back to Radio Contra episode 145. That was the interview that I did with Dr. Arthur Bradley, who is a NASA scientist, and he is the leading expert on EMP in the entire world. He works in NASA's lab down in Alabama. This is what he studies. And he makes videos under the EMP doc channel on YouTube. He does sell products. His website, I don't know it offhand because, again, I don't have any show notes in front of me. I'm just speaking. But Dr. Arthur Bradley is a wonderful, wonderful guy. He's 82nd Airborne vet. He was 11 Bravo. And that interview is, I think it was very informative for me. I know that longtime listeners, you know, we're approaching episode 300, so that was some time back. But longtime listeners really got a lot out of that. So go back and listen to that. And we talked a little bit about CMEs and protection from, you know, all of that. But let's talk about coronal mass ejections, right? excuse me. Got a little allergy thing going on in case anybody's wondering. So, you know, EMP is constantly a conversation that people have, like, you know, EMP weapons and Starfish Prime, that project. And there's a lot of tinfoil hat that's out there. Okay. Do I think EMP is something that is cause for concern? Yes. Do I think that it is something that you should lose your minds over and, more importantly, sleep over? Not really. Not really. Because there are a number of ways to protect and safeguard your equipment. And just as he and I talked about in that interview, the things that are at most risk in today's society are high voltage power lines, because they're most vulnerable. And so it's not the lines themselves getting burned up. It's the substations. That is a problem, and that is something that is being addressed, you know, much to the consternation of the doomsayers out there. But it is something that we're addressing. It is a problem. It has been heard in Congress, and it is one thing. I don't want to be that guy telling you, all is fine, don't worry. But it is one thing that we actually are addressing as a nation to harden our attack surface and our resiliency. It is there. I mean, that doesn't sell headlines. That doesn't sell prepper supplies and all this stuff. And I am in that business, but I'm not going to feed you a line of BS. Okay. Am I telling, and again, I want to be specific. Am I telling you that it's not a threat? No, it is, but it's not the threat that people make of it. I think that's a good way to put that. It's not the big bad monster that everybody thinks that it is. Like the one all-encompassing thing, like, the escape from L.A. where everything kicks off and it just sends us back to the Stone Age. I just don't see that happening. We're going to be our own undoing, and that's a whole other conversation unto itself. But we'll be our own undoing before that occurs. Let's talk about CMEs. So coronal mass ejections, they happen constantly. They're happening all the time. This is not a once-in-a-lifetime event either. Contrary to a lot of what the alarmism on the internet is saying, this is not a once-in-a-lifetime event. When I was doing my undergrad here in the great state of North Carolina, back in the early 2000s, there we saw the Aurora Borealis one night, in Boone, North Carolina. We saw it. You know, it was there. It was faint, but it was there, and it was kind of pinkish red, just like the one that we saw, you know, last weekend. Here's the deal. You know, the major impacts from these happen about every 20 years. We have a long history of this. And I'll be up front and say, with the sun, we know a lot, but there's a heck of a lot we don't know. Okay, we know with the sun, and in particular how this affects the ionosphere, and I'm going to talk about the ionosphere in a minute. We know that it comes and goes, and it works roughly in 11-year cycles. These cycles are heating and cooling cycles based on the solar activity, and it's a lot like winters and summers here on Earth. You know, we work in, you know, in an annual cycle that, you know, every 6 months or so, the weather begins to change. We're getting into the summer cycles now, and we can predict those. And then you have microclimates, like, you know, my particular region that I live in, my growing region that I live in, my microclimate has certain weather characteristics to it that we can predict annually. And we've been doing this for a really long time. There's an almanac, right? The almanac is written about that based on annual trends. And these go back, you know, way, 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 way back to, you know, the 1600s and earlier, because when we were an agrarian-based society, largely, and I think that we are headed back to that in a lot of ways, you know, we needed that. We didn't have, you know, weather bug and, you know, all this stuff. Like, you didn't have all of that. So you had to really predict weather cycles based on observations, based on historical observations. And so we began to do this with the sun in about the 1820s, 1830s. We were doing it before that. I mean, you know, there were scientists that went blind trying to study the sun. You know, they were literally staring in it and burnt their corneas out. But you know, we were observing the sun going into that, and we were noticing certain phenomena. We were noticing how weather patterns on the Earth, there was a correlation there. Correlation, of course, doesn't equal causation, but it does explain why there are changes in certain things, or at least give us a clue why there are changes in certain weather patterns. And so in the last 11 years, we've been in a minimum, a solar minimum, a cooling cycle, and we're headed back into a solar maximum. So during a solar minimum, you have very low sunspot activity, solar activity, and that in turn causes a reduction in the reflectivity of our ionosphere. And so weather-wise, you can expect usually, just looking at the correlation here between all that, you can expect milder winters, you know, summers that are somewhat mild to hot, very wet. There are certainly some effects with the moon cycles and the tides. Like there are correlations there. We don't necessarily have causation though, because all of the stuff is theoretical. It's just observations that we've made and hypothesis that we've drawn based on those observations. And, you know, but we don't have any iron proof, though, that, yes, this is absolutely what this is. And it's mainly because we just don't know what we don't know. I mean, in the 1800s, we didn't have the observation capabilities that we do now. And in 100 years from now, if we're all still around, they'll be looking back on this era and say, you know, man, they didn't have the technology then that we have now. You know, but what we are learning is so much more, right? So we didn't all die from a Carrington event. We didn't all have the our electronics fried, and you know, all the scary things that we've been sold on, right? You know, some people are trying to, you know, doomsday you into thinking. I mean, and again, I'm not telling you that it's not a concern. I'm just shedding light on the underlying science behind what's going on, all right, and why this isn't necessarily a bad thing. So let's talk radio real quick. So there were some YouTube people and, you know, associated fellow travelers out there who, you know, I'll refuse to comment further on, who were out there. They were really overselling the doom porn stuff. And man, oh man, even the government is saying it's going to black out the communications. And man, oh my God. Look, spaceweather.com is a website that if you are an HF operator on amateur radio, you should already be familiar with. I don't remember if it is an amateur radio exam question or not. I'll have to go back and look over the exam pool. I don't remember if it is or it isn't, but I do remember that when we were learning, when I was in the Army, when we were learning HF, we had to check spaceweather.com as part of the block of instruction to learn how to use it and to learn, you know, what all the things meant. And it's pretty simple. You know, on brushbeater.org, you can see the solar index. There's a little handy tool in the margins where it's going to tell you the band conditions and current solar status and all of that, right? And, you know, I mean, it just gives you a rough prediction, right? 80 meters, 3.5 to 4 megahertz. 40 meters, 7 to 7.3 megahertz, so on and so forth. It'll tell you, you know, day and night, whether the band conditions are going to be good, fair, or bad. Anyway, so, you know, that's a handy tool, but really you can do a lot of this by ear. And the way that you know that HF band conditions are good or bad is if you just get on the radio and you hear, like, the bacon frying noise. That's the what we call the noise floor. The louder the bacon frying noise is, that's actually the noise of the ionosphere. If it's too high, that means the signal-to-noise ratio is too high, and you're not going to really get your signal out. It's going to get eaten up in that. And, you know, it changes in frequency depending on what level of the ionosphere is being energized or activated or so on and so forth. Right, and I explain all this in the RTO course, and, you know, we go in-depth in it. My buddy Tony, Wyoming Survival, big shout-out to him. He's going to be doing his HF operations class here at my place in September in the very classroom that I'm sitting in right now. And it's a low-cost course. I think he's charging like $200 for it. It's a low-cost course. I get absolutely nothing out of it other than a weekend to hang out with all of you. Which is really cool, and get to hang out with a very close friend of mine. So I'm really excited for that, to get him up here. I've been trying to get him out of his enclave in Wyoming for a long time. So big shout out to Wyoming Survival. If you're not following Tony over at Wyoming Survival on Twitter / X or Instagram, you know, you need to get over there. He is a great, great friend of mine. And, you know, so big shout out to him. I know he's going to be listening to this show. I know he's going to be listening to this episode. So, brother, much love to you, man. A lot of stories with that dude. And I can't wait to get him out here into North Carolina, dude. We're going to have so much fun. Dolio's going to be here that weekend. It's going to be out of control. It is going to be out of control. I think y'all can tell how excited I am about it. Anyway, I'm getting off track. So the ionosphere, right? The ionosphere is how HF works. And we need the ionosphere to be able to propagate or reflect and refract our HF signals. And it works differently at different layers of the ionosphere. Well, the ionosphere has to be charged by the sun. And so in the 11-year minimum that we are now coming out of, so I've spent all this time telling you kind of the bad news. Here we go into the good news. It ain't all doom and gloom, dude. I'm telling you, by the end of this episode, you're going to be like, yeah, I'm getting into HF. So in the late 1990s and into the early 2000s, people really, in the amateur radio world, they really got into QRP, or low power HF radio. Which, I mean, QRP could really be any kind of amateur radios, low power, CB included, MERS, GMRS, all that stuff, right? All that jazz. But 5 watts or less, typically, you know, and in kind of in this day and age, you know, 5 watts or less is the general rule of thumb for QRP. But because there are low power radios that'll push 10 watts now, Zygu 6100 being one, that is a incredibly popular radio. We're gonna have the Zygu 6200 coming out later this summer too, and it is just in time. And I'm so excited for that. But anyway, all these QRP radios came out. Like you had the Yaesu 817, right? Which I had one of those for a long period of time. The ICOM 703 came out. And, you know, which is kind of ICOM's answer to the Yaesu. Yaesu, the A17 is extremely popular. It's still extremely popular. I mean, they discontinued that sometime back. And people are still buying that radio, like on the second-hand market. But anyway, where I was going with that is they got popular because working low power was pretty easy to do. Because we were in a solar maximum during that time. Then around, I'll say, sorry, pollen and grass, just plugging me up, folks. It was probably around 20, 13 or so, we began to go into the solar minimum. So there wasn't as much solar activity. So, you know, the ionosphere needs those CMEs to be charged up. They're not all bad. Most of them are actually pretty good. And when we get hit with a CME initially for that 12 to 24 hour period of when we get hit with one, it's going to cause that bacon frying noise and, you know, the signal to noise ratio to be very, very high. And you know, you're probably not going to get a signal out on HF unless you're running a whole lot of power. But once the storm calms down, then the ionosphere is charged up and it's supercharged. And it's like when you clean a mirror, you know, like a mirror can get dirty and like dust and grime on it. You don't really see the image real well. And then all of a sudden you clean it, you spray it Windex on it, right? You wipe it off, it's super clean. Then it's like, you know, the mirror has that clean reflection coming off of it. You see everything so much better. Well, the ionosphere works very similarly on HF. And so with a little bit of power that you're putting out, all of a sudden you have a much better signal. And so low power operations, which are usually a challenge, and, you know, it takes some learning to get into that, but it is very rewarding. Low power HF is how I cut my teeth on HF operations and learning, you know, antenna theory in particular on HF during a solar minimum. Right. And I learned a number of very important lessons from that I'm putting in my upcoming book about antenna theory, specifically about antenna theory on HF and why you really need to pay attention to it. Just, you know, a lot of hams, a lot of amateur radio operators think, you know, hey, just because I've got a tuner, I don't really need to pay attention to, you know, how resonant or how close to resonant my antenna actually is. And that's false. If you're running low power, you absolutely need to be paying attention to that. And your antenna tuner is really nothing more than an insurance policy in case there's some changes in your HF antenna that are outside of your control, as they frequently are. But again, you know, we cover all this in the RTO course in depth, and you know, you get hands-on doing all this, and it's a strong jumping-off point to shallow that learning curve that's pretty steep. So what does this all have to do with the solar cycles and CMEs and all that? CMEs are a regular event, and they're going to continue. This isn't something that's new by any means. It's not going to stop by any means. And I'm not saying that there aren't going to be some as we're going into the solar maximum, meaning that the sun is waking back up for its 11-year cycle, and that it's going to be spitting out, you know, a whole bunch of CMEs to make the ionosphere very active over the next roughly 11 years or so. I'm not saying that we're, the potential's not there for a Carrington event style thing, whether it's local or worldwide. Could it happen? Yeah. And is the potential there for causing widespread disruptions to services? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But the good news is that HF conditions for HF operations are about to get a heck of a lot better and a heck of a lot easier than they have been in the last 11 years. And by the way, in case anybody out there is interested or as interested as I am in this, CB, Citizens Band Radio, which can be a polarizing topic among some folks. I, for one, really enjoy CB radio. I think there was a period of time a few years ago where I had kind of written it off as not being useful at all. But now the CB58 has breathed complete new life into that, and the ability to do digital data bursts over CB. And I'm grinning with a really devious grin because CB is, in fact, in the HF band. It's in the very top end of it, but it is, in fact, in HF. CB works really, really well during solar maximums. So I, for one, am really excited to see the possibilities that are on the horizon for the next 11 years for the CB band. I think it's going to be really cool. I think some of the things that people are going to be able to do experimenting with CB is going to be really, really cool. And so it's kind of a because it's license free and it's kind of looked at as the Wild West. There's just so many cool things, so many cool opportunities that folks are going to have with it out there. But again, that might be a whole other episode unto itself. But I want to talk real quick. So Carrington event, in case, you know, nobody knew, the Carrington event of 1858 was named after British scientists that studied it. One of them, Robert Carrington, studied it in 1858. And they could see the aurora borealis and the southern lights as well. You know, all across the world, basically the aurora borealis, the northern lights were able to be seen all the way down to Cuba, and they could see them in Queensland, Australia as well. There were reported sightings of it. It burned out radio telegraph operators. The relay stations shocked some of the operators. You know, we've got transcripts from that era of telegraph operators that they were sending messages back and forth. You know, this is all historical lessons here. But one thing to keep in mind about the Carrington event is, you know, not to be a naysayer, but we didn't know what we didn't know about electricity back then. And in particular, protection from these types of events. We didn't really know what we didn't know. And I'm not going to sit and say that, again, it's not a threat, but it's not. Basically, we know certain things about it now to have safeguards in place. And again, you know, I keep giving a disclaimer statement here. I don't want you coming away from this thinking, you know, oh, there's no threat and I don't have to take any precautions. No, I strongly urge you to go back and listen to my interview with Dr. Arthur Bradley, and I strongly urge you to take those precautions. But what I'm telling you is that I don't think that this is the thing that's going to cause us to go back to the Stone Age. I just don't see that. If something like that's going to happen, we're going to do that to ourselves. Never underestimate the human's ability to utterly destroy ourselves. Okay, it's like Doc Holliday from Tombstone. I've not yet begun to defile myself. That's kind of humans in a nutshell. Okay, so you know we're resourceful little creatures. But we're also destructive little creatures, and in particular to ourselves. So, you know, the heart of what I'm trying to tell you is that there's a lot of doom porn that's being thrown around out there. The Carrington event, 1858, was not an isolated incident. There have been others since then. You know, it hasn't been the... I misspoke. It was not 1858. I just pulled it up here. It was 1859. September of 1859. I had to pull that up because I kept saying 1858. And I didn't think that was right. Anyway, the one time that my eidetic memory was a little bit faulty, I had to pull that up. I had to fact check myself. I had to give myself a little community notes there. But anyway, there has been others. Okay, there have been others. There have been other events. You know, I had a few of these written down. 1872 was another event. 1921, 1938, 1941. You'll notice that these follow kind of in that pattern that I was talking about. And this is when we began to realize that the sun operated in roughly an 11-year maximum and minimum cycle. All right. And in 1960, there was widespread radio disruption You know, I'm just going here. I had my show notes out to the side, but you know, I've got the whole thing here. A lot of the ones that more recent storm that people reference is March of 1989, and that was in Quebec, and it did knock out power there. They were able to quickly get it restored, but that's yet another example of something that could happen. And again, I was referencing early 2000s, 2003. Here is a reference to Aurora Borealis. It was the most powerful solar explosions ever recorded, was in 2003. And we were able to see the Aurora Borealis all the way here in North Carolina. So there's a little footnote there talking about the May 2024 storms. So the one that we're discussing here. You know, and the effects of that, there were minor disruptions that were being reported, but they were relatively minor. And that's the last thing that I really want to impart on y'all out there, you know, kind of a parting shot for the end of the show, is that we did have a major solar storm and there will be others, but the disruption that occurred there was relatively minor. What can we take away from that? Does that mean that you should have your head up in the clouds? Yet again, you know, head up in the clouds. You know, it's not going to happen. Nothing ever happens. No, you know, absolutely not. It's not a black and white this or that. I mean, just because the tornado didn't hit your house this time doesn't mean it won't next time, right? You know, does that mean you don't dig a storm shelter? Does that mean you don't try and harden your attack surface? No. You absolutely should. It's just that the point that I'm making here is that our resiliency to these types of things are way better than they were in 1859 or even 1989. Right? The technology has gotten better. So I'm not telling you not to worry about it. I'm not telling you not to take precautions, but I am telling you that this is going to be a regular occurrence now going forward. We're entering a solar maximum period, and that if there are good things to be taken away from this, and I contend that there are some great lessons to be taken from it, it's that HF radio is about to get a hell of a lot more fun. And it's going to be a lot easier for me to teach it in the RTO course, because that means that the band conditions will be cooperating and we'll have a lot more people on the air. And it'll be a lot more opportunities for all of you to get on the air out there as well. And that's what really matters at the end of the day. I'm excited for it. Nobody should be panicking. Hey, you know, solar maximum's fixing to happen. Radio conditions are going to be a lot more fun. Get out there, get on the radio, get on HF, enjoy that low power, start experimenting with stuff. Because I'm telling you, man, like, amateur radio as a hobby is it's a really fun hobby. You know, I kind of write from the more militant, like, practical application. What do you do with this hobby in a professional context if you know you had to utilize it for some sort of organizational purpose, right? But amateur radio as a hobby is just a heck of a lot of fun, man. And it's one that, you know, it is a community that very much is what you make of it. And despite a lot of the mudslinging that we see online, you know, in various communities, some of the sourpusses out there, you know, that you know, some folks call sad hams or whatever. Hey, you know, they are what they are. Amateur radio is what you make it. And if you don't like what those guys have to say, don't associate with them. I don't, and I'm very active. So, you know, you don't have to be aligned with all of that. And you know, you don't have to do all of that. There's a ton of opportunities out there, you know, and I provide one of those. But I am one. There are many, okay? There are many, many, many that are out there. And there is something for everybody in this radio hobby, and there's a ton of practical application as well, right? So conditions are about to get a hell of a lot more fun. The opportunities to get on the air are about to grow tremendously, and I'm really, really proud to see it, very happy to see it, and, you know, and be in a position to where, you know, I'm very much a part of it and able to facilitate that for a lot of new operators out there. So, you know, I'm excited. Anyway, got a lot of equipment over at brushmeter.store. Some of the best prices on products that you can find on the internet out there, bar none. We've got next day shipping. Sometimes if you order before noon, it is same day shipping. And everything that we say that we have in stock is literally in stock at my place. Okay, it ain't drop shipped from anywhere. It is my hands that are putting it in a box and sending it to you out there. Again, I serve this community. Brushbeater.store. And the last thing that I want to tell you, brushbeatergold.com. Brushbeatergold.com. We're seeing the devaluation of the dollar occurring on a daily basis. I was just talking to a pretty big player and patent holder in the firearms community yesterday afternoon. We had a pretty lengthy conversation. He called me up. He saw me on Colonel Murray's show, the Veterans Roundtable, and just big, big fan of that show. And I haven't talked to this individual in a while, and it was great to hear from him. But we had a long conversation. He has been a big advocate of gold for a long period of time. He actually taught me some things about the gold market back in the day, back when we first met, because that's another hobby of his, is tracking precious metals markets. It's just a hobby that he follows, and one that's served him well over the years, on top of designing world-renowned firearms that all of you have seen in movies. You've seen them featured on the news a lot. If you traveled overseas in any sort of military or contractor capacity, you've probably seen them fielded. But, you know, we were talking about gold in particular and where gold markets are going to go, and the investment that both China and Russia and India have made in gold markets themselves in raw bullion. Look, the U.S. dollar is in some trouble, and if you have a IRA that is backed by the U.S. dollar and is traded on the U.S. dollar, because that's the way IRAs work, then, you know, your life savings and everything that you've worked for might be in some trouble, okay? Genesis Gold Group can give you some pointers and can steer you in the right direction for a precious metals backed retirement account that is a recognized IRA. Now, not every plan is right for every individual, but it is what I use personally, and it is what I am utilizing to set myself up for success no matter what may happen. Bidenomics, I think, has destroyed a lot of the prospects of the U.S. dollar going forward. And I don't know if a lot can be done to salvage it because of the damage that's been done and the amount of debt that we have. But what I will say is that gold is always going to have its value. And so having an IRA account that's backed by gold, the Genesis Gold Group, might be something that you want to look into. Give them a call. You can give them a call, absolutely toll free. But I encourage you to check it out through my site, brushbeatergold.com. That's brushbeatergold.com. Anyway, folks, God bless. I will talk to you again very, very soon. I wanted to shed some light on CMEs, and I wanted to give a special thank you for supporting brushbeater.store for all of this time that you have. We have grown tremendously in just over a year's time, and I am really excited to unveil where it is headed here in the very near future. With that said, folks, God bless, and I'll talk to you again very, very soon. Zensi Scout, out.